welcome to Vision Scope, a program designed to educate and inform on matters relating to disabilities. My name is Wilbert Williams. Janet, the last time you were here, we were in deep discussions with you about your sojourn in, I think it was World United College.
Mm-hmm.
And then you went on to tell us how you came across your husband in a wading pool and the romance that developed as a result of that stumbling over this gentleman. And then you finished World College and you came back to Jamaica. Am I correct in my summary?
Yes, I did. I finished up in 84, mm-hmm. and returned to Jamaica and went to Michael's Teachers College for a year and then got married.
Oh, so you was it that marriage prevented you from completing Michael?
Actually, no. When my husband, not yet husband, asked me to marry him, I said no, because I had a plan, you see. And I told him I didn't want a handbag. I was going to finish up Michael. I was going to work for a year or two and get some experience as a teacher under my belt. And then I would consider getting married. But if there's one thing I can say for my husband, he's persistent. And I did some research and discovered that completing Michael and then moving to the United States, that certificate would not be considered as a teaching degree. I would have to get a teaching degree. Mm-hmm. So that's why I didn't complete it. And that's why I decided, okay, yes.
So after the year at Michael Teachers College, you then migrated to the United States. Is that it?
I did. Mm-hmm. Yes, I migrated in 85. I think it was July 85.
Mm-hmm. So on arrival or on re-entry into the United States, what were some of the hurdles you had to overcome in order to get your career going again?
I don't know if you'd call it a hurdle, Mr. Will. I met with racial prejudice for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Within my husband's family, I remember them being the ones to pick me up from the airport, and I was waiting in Boise, Idaho for them. He went up to the counter and said he was here to pick up Janet Jackson. Mm-hmm. Do they know of a passenger by that name? And they pointed to me and he looked around and said, I am not here to pick up a black woman.
Oh, no.
So that was my very first experience of prejudice, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
My next experience, again in Idaho, was maybe about 6 months later when I decided, all right, I can't do teaching right now. Mummy said that I was to have a job. It was a good thing for a wife to have a job.
Mm-hmm.
So I would just work as a secretary. And they made all sorts of excuses. But the one I heard clearly as I left was, we don't want any black people here. So.
But Janet, that how did you react internally? Because that must have turned your stomach upside down.
I did not know that what it did to me. I have been a pretty easygoing person. And sometimes I don't recognize the more negative emotions of depression. And it wasn't until my first daughter was born that I realized I had spent the last 2 years depressed. I lived my life, I did my things, I went here and there. My husband and I moved from Idaho to Oregon, which was a good move for us at the time. But it wasn't until she came along that I realized I had been sleepy. I had been out of touch with myself. I was just existing. And then the why of it, and then shrugging it off and saying, all right, so that's behind me. I'll move forward.
So tell us what was the next step in the process.
So then the next step was becoming a homemaker with two daughters and living in Oregon for about almost 10 years. And then my husband got it into his head that he wanted to be back in Idaho with his family. So we moved back to Idaho and was there for about 15 years before making the move to Seattle. And it was while in Idaho, after my daughter, my youngest, was finished with elementary school, that I made the decision to go back to university and earn my teaching degree as a special educator. And then a new door opened and a different road was traveled.
Where did you do the teaching degree? In what state?
Idaho,
In Idaho.
in, yeah, at Boise State University.
And you completed that degree and went into the school system, I would imagine.
No,
Oh.
and yes, I did complete the degree. And it was my final year. I was in the professional teaching, the student teaching role. And it's a year-long process with Boise State. And as I had a joint degree in elementary education and special education, that made it a full year because I had to do student teaching in both. And it was my spring or winter semester that they sat me down, and the head of the special ed department said she could not certify me as a teacher because I was blind. And she tried to find all sorts of reasons and all sorts of things. They put things in place that it would take a whole long story to tell you that. Just in short, to say we almost ended up in court. Their lawyer, they finally consulted their lawyer, and their lawyer said, you are going to be sued. This woman have every right to sue you and sue you big. You have to take a step back. The consumer groups, the national consumer groups, were advocating to actually take that action. Much prayer and thought later, I said, I just want to be with the children. I don't want to carry on with this. And they offered me two options. Option one, now remember, this isn't going to be my spring semester. And they were going to put different school to complete my student teaching. No support No pre-planning, nothing. I was going to be set up for failure. Or I could graduate with a degree in education and no certification. So I
But
chose.
the second option would not have been on for you, I would imagine.
Actually, I took the second action.
You did.
Yeah, I took the
Okay.
second option. I did graduate and I was not certified in Boise. But at that time, we serve an awesome God. He had
Yes.
things all planned out. I cried out to him and he didn't seem to answer. It seemed like every door was being slammed in my face that spring. Every single door. And he opened one that I didn't realize was a door until I stepped through it and recognized this is what I wanted all along. He introduced me to the then head of the vision preparation program at Portland State University, Blue Bickford. Or James Bickford, but everybody knows him as Blue. And we sat down and had a long talk. And he said, that's nonsense what they're saying. You're fully capable. So I enrolled in the Portland State Vision Teacher Program and got my completed my degree in special education as a master's degree and got certified as a teacher of students with visual impairment.
Much better
And
than you had originally anticipated.
like I said, I serve an
Yes,
awesome God.
yes, yes.
I had a plan. My plan was to finish Boise State, go to work at the School for the Deaf and Blind in Idaho, and then do the vision program at Portland State. But the Lord had it all worked out.
You just went straight into the vision program.
Yeah. And Blue sent me to the furthest corner of the states to do my student teaching. He sent me to Idaho, to Indiana. And I asked him, why did you send me so far away? You're sending two cowards, my guide dog and me, to this far place. And he said, he looked at the two of us and said, I don't see any cowards here. So,
Well,
yeah.
no, Janet, in all of this, where was your husband?
So he kept down the household. He and the girls stayed in Idaho. He came out for a visit. I think I was there for a full 12 weeks, and he visited maybe week 8 or something like that. But my favorite part of his visit was back there, they had a lot of tornadoes, and the sound that the tornado alarm, it was just practice. It was no tornado coming. And we were standing at the bus stop. And I thought he was going to jump off the sidewalk. And I said, oh, no, it's just the sound that you need to get familiar with if there's a tornado.
It's a practice sound. Yes. So you settled in Indiana, and what was the experience like there?
It was very positive. I had a lot of fun and I learned a lot of things. I learned that I was a capable teacher and it didn't matter that I couldn't see. I learned that, well, one small thing is they told me back in Boise State that I was to go ahead and teach blind children because blind children would not run away. They were well behaved. They didn't get into trouble. And I wouldn't need to have vision in order to teach blind children.
But is that true?
There was a time we were on the playground, and my assistant came over to me and said, "So and so is standing on the top of the monkey bars." And I said, "Standing on the top." And she said, "Yeah, he's just got one foot on one rung and another foot on another, his arms spread out, and he's teetering." And I said, "All right." So I turned towards student and calmed my nerves and called out to him. And he said, "Yeah, Miss George." I said, "Come down." And he said, "Yeah." So he flipped over on the monkey bars, hung by his toes, and dropped down head first.
Oh no.
And I thought to myself, and these are blind children. They don't give any trouble. They're well behaved.
But they are human beings.
Exactly. And it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter
It
now.
doesn't matter at all. I run a program in the summers and have been doing so for the past, well, I guess this is my 13th year. And teenagers are teenagers. They just happen to be blind.
Oh, yes.
You know, yeah, I could tell stories,
But
but I won't.
isn't that telling you something that the expectation is that if you're blind, you're supposed to be well behaved and innocent, almost angelic. And
Exactly.
therefore, if you do anything that the sighted child would do, you're extraordinary.
Exactly. Exactly. I, as a vision teacher, I was an itinerant, and I went to this school, and I noticed that it had snowed, one of the rare times in Idaho, not Idaho, in Seattle, when it's, and I saw that all the other kids were outside having fun. They were riding the sleds down the hill, and they were laughing. And the blind student was standing up against the wall with his one and one. And Miss Nosy, who has no sense of anything, said, "Why is he there? Why is he not playing with the other kids? He'd get hurt. He'd fall. He'd fall." So I stopped and I watched the kids for a while. And then I said, "That child fell. Why don't you put her over here? She can see." "Oh, I see." Another child fell over. "And that child too?" "Well, it's just not something you want a blind child to do. They just don't know how to do it. And you have taught him." "No." So I took him by the hand. I got a sled and I showed him what the sled was like. And then we trudged up to the top of the hill. I sat him on the sled, sat myself down behind him, and we went zooshing down. He had a blast. Then
It's
I
a
said,
different world for him.
"Yeah." Then I said, "Okay, I'll stand at the top of the hill. You come to my voice." So he and his sled came to my voice and he went zooshing down. And at the end of this, the teacher said, "I didn't know."
So ignorance really is part of the we have to overcome.
Yes, for sure.
And you can You can get all the training in the world, but if you don't have the experience, something is missing.
I agree with you, and I think that there is research that says there's a high degree of illiteracy among vision impaired people. And I have thought on that. It's not that they can't read, it's that they don't have the concepts
Yes.
because they don't have the experience.
Yeah, that is important.
Yeah, when I was volunteering at my daughter's school, I was working with a blind child, and he was reading this story, and he stopped and said, "Mrs. George, what's an ocean?" Well, I stopped this lesson and I talked to him as best I could to explain an ocean,
Yes.
answered his questions, and I got in trouble.
Why? Because you stopped the class?
Because I stopped the lesson with him. I was only working with him. I was supposed to have him practice reading.
But there was a gap in his knowledge that you needed to fill.
Yes.
But doesn't that put blind and disabled people at a disadvantage when that kind of attitude is taken by professionals?
Wouldn't you think so?
I would think
Wouldn't you?
so, yes,
Yeah,
without a doubt.
that concept development is important. It's like the federal government in back in 2014 mandated that each vocational rehabilitation agency that had government funding, federal government funding, must set aside 15% of their income to serve transition age students 14 through 21. And recently, we were told that one of our programs had to have a particular format. We were serving 14, 15, and sometimes 16-year-olds in this particular program. And we were told that we had to teach them to write cover letters and resumes. These kids had never worked before. These kids, in many cases, didn't understand the concept of work. The program, in its previous life, focused on career in exploration. Students would go out and visit different work sites. Sometimes they would get to shadow people on the job, do informational interviewing, but they were out there in the field exploring. They can still do a little of that, but the main focus now is, as one student put it from last year, schoolwork. I don't want to be a part of that.
Yeah, that is a disadvantage. Tell us now about your next step. You worked at Indiana, then what?
So after Indiana, or while at Indiana, I had the huge decision to make of where I was going to work. I had four or five job offers or interviews, and one was in Maryland, one was in Wyoming, one was in Wisconsin, and one of them in Idaho at the School for the B Deaf and Blind there. And the others were residential schools. I would be in one place and the one in Idaho was an itinerant teacher working with the birth to three population mainly, though some elementary and high school kids were thrown in. And I said firmly to the Lord, I do not want to work with anybody younger than first grade. I can't find them. And I don't want to be an itinerant teacher. I want to have my own classroom. I want to have a place, a stable place. I don't want to go from school to school to school. I am sure that our Heavenly Father must have looked down at me, shaken his head, thrown his head back, laughed, and I got hired at Idaho School for the Deaf and Blind as a baby teacher and an itinerant, which I turned out I loved.
Yes. So how
So
long did you stay in that post?
I worked there for a year. And by now, my husband had moved to Seattle. He got a job in Seattle and he had moved there. And we agreed I would stay with my daughters because my youngest was finishing up her high school and we didn't want to interrupt that process. It was her last year. And I think it was 2007 to 2008 school year that I worked in Idaho at the School for the Deaf and Blind. And then I heard of a position in Seattle that was right up my alley. I wouldn't be working in the classrooms. I would actually be working with the families, which is what I wanted to do, to have more direct contact with the families, helping the students at home rather than in school, learning the expanded core curriculum of daily living skills, cooking, cleaning, financial management, social skills, just that kind of thing, and answering parent questions, teaching the parents how to support their children when they're home. So I took that, and that has been my life since 2008. I have been working with the Department Services for the Blind here in Washington State. My job has grown up, I guess. You started with the direct service, individual service with individual families. And now it's more group services, more workshops where I'm serving multiple people and not as much the families, but the students themselves, still in the outside school of life.
From the title of your current position, it sounds as if you are writing programs a lot of the time. Are you programs for disabled children and their families?
Developing those programs. And yeah, I do a lot of that. I think I mentioned
You did originally,
I
yes.
do enjoy working the summer program, which is called Yes To Youth Employment Solutions. It's in its 27th year, and I had the honor to be the director of it for about 13 of those years, 13 or so of those years. And it encapsulates all that the federal government has mandated the agencies to do: provide work experience, provide training in self-advocacy, provide workplace readiness skills, those social daily living skills I mentioned, provide exploration of post-secondary experiences. We don't do as much of that, but we are on the college campus, and they at least get to explore the social part. Do you know how noisy turnitin get?
Yes.
Yeah,
Yes.
very, very noisy.
Janet, in all of this, how did your husband work with you? When I mean, from we the last time we saw him was in. So what happened after that?
So, just to be honest, I think that me going back to school began the end of our relationship because we went in different directions. We didn't stand together as closely as we should have. In the beginning, yes, I will say that he has always been supportive, always. But by the time I was working at the Department Services for the Blind DSB, I started to notice that our friends were no longer friends. These are my friends, those are your friends. And what we had in common was no longer there. The children had up and left home, and we didn't take time to build commonality. So our relationship deteriorated. We're still friends, we still talk, but we're no longer together.
You're no longer together. Was that very traumatic for you, or you took
Yes.
it in your strides?
Oh no, it was very, very traumatic. Divorce is not something I would recommend for anyone unless you were being abused, and I was not being abused. I felt like I was not good enough. I could not be good enough. I felt like I was constantly drowning, and if I were to climb out of the pool and stand on the side, I didn't have time to dry off because I fell right back in. So it was an emotional turmoil, a time when I cried and cried to my Heavenly Father, and finally he pulled me out of the pool, dried me off, and said, "Now go." And so I did.
So it's a brand new experience for you.
It is, Mr. Will. It is. I had to discover that I am worthy. I am who I think I am. And because when you're married, Mr. Will, you become one.
Oh,
That's something
yes.
I don't think people realize,
Hello.
that you're one. And when you're separated, it's like half of you is gone.
You go into mourning.
Yes, I think that's it. You go into mourning and you have to grieve that experience and be healed. You
Yes.
have to heal.
What about your social life on the whole? Do you, I mean, I know you are involved in your church activities and so, but outside of that, what is social life like?
Well, my girls would say that I'm a social butterfly, but I don't believe it. I have lots of friends. We do things together. Last week, Wednesday, a friend and I did gardening here at the new house. lots of gardening to do, and we had a great time. And
Hmm.
then Friday, I went with another friend to a tea house and had high tea. And yeah, I would say that I have a good social life. My name is well known in the blindness community here in Washington, and I discovered Oregon as well. Oh, you're the Janet George.
Your
Yes.
name precedes you.
Yeah, it
Yes,
does.
yes.
I last year at our professionals convention or conference, you know, Mr. Will, I think the problem is I talk too much. So this teacher came up and introduced herself and said, somebody pointed you out as Janet George, and I've been wanting to talk to you. So I said, yeah, nice to meet you. Well, I have this student.
To give you work right away.
And I said, Well, she's from, she has a Latino background, and everybody is saying that we need to remember that this culture, they do for their people with disabilities. It's a community. They work together. And I said, that is good, but if you look within the community, each individual cares for their personal needs. They shower themselves. They don't wait for somebody else to shower them. Oh, I've got to take that back to my team.
Yes. So you are always giving advice and always being called upon for information.
Yes. But I really like spending time with my friends, but I enjoy the quiet time. I am an introverted extrovert.
Janet, what is your biggest disappointment in your life so far?
Wow, that's a weighty question. What is my biggest disappointment?
Yes. If you could live your life over, you would do that particular aspect differently.
The thing that pops into my head, first off, is my relationship with Mike.
Okay.
I think I would, neither of my girls walk with the Lord. And I think that's where I'd start, that God be more centered in our lives as a family. Some of the choices we made back then, I would not make, and they're all family related. And definitely thread through the years, because Mike and I was together for almost 30 years.
That's a long
And
time.
it
You
is.
were part of each other.
Yes, and just thread through it more time together, just him and me, without the girls. The girls were always with us. And I have a strong relationship with each of them.
Okay. What would you say is the happiest moment in your life?
Wow.
I know there are several, but which one would you put
Oh
at the
my
top?
goodness. That one's hard. That's harder than the disappointment. I don't know. I don't know, Mr. Will. I can say when my children were born, those were very, very happy moments. I think I don't know. I really don't know, sir.
Okay. What is your favorite food? What do you like to eat most than anything else?
Rice and peas and curry goat.
Oh, you're a curry lady.
Yeah, curry
Yes.
goat or oxtail.
Yes. Have you been able to travel much outside of the United States?
Not as much as I'd like to.
You have done some travel.
I've gone to Europe,
Oh,
Mexico. I have never been to Canada. It's
Which is right
practically
next
next
door. It's
door.
surprising,
Exactly. I've never
yes.
been to Canada. I was answering the question to somebody earlier, and I said, I've gone as far as a stone's throw, but I've never been across the border.
Okay. What is your biggest dream?
My biggest dream is twofold. I have a personal dream and a professional dream. My personal dream is to see my daughters and their husbands come to know the Lord as their Savior. That's my heart's biggest desire. And professionally, I would like to touch the lives of the kids I work with, to help them to recognize their own potential. And to help them to reach that potential. Those are my dreams.
What would you say are two of the major social issues as you see it that confront people who are blind in the United States at the moment?
The first one is the barriers that are put in place by society, society's unwillingness to see us as capable, functional, productive people. That is one of the biggest ways I hear a lot about social justice. I hear a lot about Black Lives Matter, but I don't hear much about people with disabilities are people too. And even within the church, we're not treated as a part of the congregation. Or at least I don't feel that way.
What has led you to that conclusion? That's an interesting conclusion.
We have a new pastor, and we were a teeny tiny itsy bitsy. Sometimes, especially in the summer, there would only be two people in church, kind of church. And he came along in October, and he has devoted himself and all his energies into growing the church. And he's doing a first-rate job of that. Truly building it up and making those connections. He's gone out of his way to do that. Anyway, soon after he arrived, he had a meeting with the group of faithfuls, as he called us, and us to share with him what were some of the things that we would like to see in the church. And when it was my turn, I would said I'd like to see a church where universal design is the norm. And he asked me to explain that. So I did. And this month in particular, I have felt very outside. We have some people who are hard of hearing. It's a African church. And many of the people attending, English is not, in fact, there are only two of us that English is our first language. And I don't see any accommodation for any one of those needs, it's just normal. He uses a PowerPoint. I explained to him that, you have us stand up and read the call to worship from the PowerPoint, and then you have the Black national anthem or whatever it is. I can't participate in that because I don't have access to it. And he says, oh, well, sometimes it's not done until the morning of, so I can't share it with you. And
No, that puts
so
you at a disadvantage.
I got yelled at last week because when everybody else was standing up to sing the Black national anthem, I sat. And I sat because everything they were singing about is a lie to me. I had no freedom. And somebody said, you need to stand up. This is the anthem. And I just quietly sat. Anyway, so yeah, those are some of the things I see that's a barrier to us, not being included, just people throwing in front of us that we are not people.
Are you a member of any associations for the blind in the United States?
No, not a formal official member. I
You.
think that in the position I am in right now, I need to be neutral because I call upon both of them that they respect the choice of my children, that they can present their side of the story. But not to solicit or sell, but rather just provide information so that the youth can choose. And therefore, I cannot be a part of anyone.
What of the future for Janet George?
I had a dream for post-retirement, and I'm not sure if it's going to work. So I'll just share it with you. My dream, I am a fully trained teacher of students with visual impairments. I'm not a mobility specialist, but my past 16 or so, no, almost 20 years of my life has been teaching students how to live independently, how to be an active part of their community. And I'd like to bring that home. I'd like to return to Jamaica and establish either to work at the School for the Blind as a vision teacher or to establish a program similar to the Yes 2 program for the youth in Jamaica who are blind. That would be my dream.
That I'm sure would be rewarding for the people of Jamaica and for you if that ever becomes a possibility. And I don't see why it can't happen.
Yeah, I've been listening to things in Jamaica and I don't know, sir. I don't know if it's home anymore.
You feel, is it that you feel this in Jamaica? At the moment.
I think that's a lot of it. I think being with our school family chat group has meant a lot to me. But that's the only connection to Jamaica I have. I have my niece and nephew and my brother's widow there, but no close family, no brother or sister or mother or uncle or anyone there.
Yes, I
So
understand.
I don't have that intimate connection. And then, sir, what we're hearing over here is crime is rampant.
Yes. We can't deny that. And that's something that we need to fix. Yes. Janet, thank you ever so much for this second interview. And we certainly appreciate it. We learned a lot from you. And, wish you all the best for the future.
Thank you. I appreciate you inviting me back a second time.
If you have any questions or comments regarding this program, please address them to norwill2@gmail.com. That is NORWILL number 2@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Have a happy and productive week. That's it for today. Join me next time when we will present another in the series Vision Scope. Music was provided by Rennie Williams Jr.